Now, one of the cool things is at Mix, you get to meet a bunch of people, and you got to meet Miguel de Casa and interview him. So, how was that?
That was really fun. He runs the Mono Project, and the video is going to be on Channel 8. And he was just really open. He was telling me about all the cool stuff that actually runs Mono, a lot more stuff than I thought. He showed me a cool little MP3 player that runs Mono. And he was just really energetic in telling kids. Like, I talked to him a bit afterwards. He was talking about Google Code, Summer of Code,
yeah,
and stuff like that. And it was just a lot of fun interviewing him. So here's a short little clip. Miguel, how do you pronounce your last name?
Miguel de Casas, my name in Spanish.
Okay, and you run the Mono Project for Novell,
yes.
Which, could you explain what the Mono Project actually is?
Yeah, actually, the Mono Project is an open source project, and Novell is probably the largest contributor, but there are a lot of other companies that contribute to Mono. Everybody contributes in the areas that actually matter to them, but I'll explain to you. Mono is an open source implementation of .NET and .NET related technologies.
Okay.
So we have a .NET virtual machine, it's open source. We have a lot of the class libraries that you would find in .NET. You know, system XML, system data, system.web, all that stuff.
Okay.
Libraries for talking to databases, web apps, web services, and so on. What I tell my students or people I mentor is that becoming good at anything, it's the same thing that a guitar teacher would tell you or a piano teacher would tell you. Or in fact, maybe the people that will watch this are not old enough to remember the Karate Kid. But I think the Karate Kid number one is a very good...
wax on, wax off.
Exactly, wax on, wax off. It basically synthesizes for the common man what in my opinion is all you need to be good at anything. Doesn't matter if it's guitar or piano or hacking or being a good developer or a good designer or a good artist or a good anything. You have to do a lot and you have to do it all the time.
Okay.
You know, so you just do whatever you want to do, just do it and do a lot of it. And you're going to fail and you're going to the first stuff is going to be bad. So just keep trying.
So, great interview there, Clint. This next interview...
Clint is behind the camera. Clint Rudkiss, our Coding for Fun blogger extraordinaire. Mr. Better Than Everyone.
Mr. Coding for Fun, Mr. Channel
Disco 8. Dance Floor.
Oh, yeah. Yep. So, we've been having fun hanging out with Clint here. We've also had fun hanging out with Chris Auld from down in New Zealand.
So, we're from a country with lots of sheep, which is, like, really nice,
hey,
but
so
it's...
But
it's like a long way from anywhere, and being a long way from anywhere means it's kind of hard to get really kick-ass performance out of your website. And we were finding that was not so much because we had large pages, but because we had pages that had like 20, 30, 40, 50 resources, particularly like Web 2.0 sites, you know, you're always getting lots of resources. So we built this startup company called Action This, and we were finding that we just weren't getting performance, right? It was great in New Zealand, but I was in Singapore, South Africa and things last year, and the performance was just horrid. And we found the reason is that we had too many requests, right? We were pulling down too much stuff. These Web 2.0 sites got lots of CSS, JavaScript, lots of icons and images. So we built a managed module for IIS 7 that takes advantage of the new IIS 7 managed native pipeline. And what it does is it basically combines all the resources and reduces the number of requests here. So you can see we're looking at Firebug here, and you can see to pull down the dashboard for our Web 2.0 site, we're only making 10 requests, right? And the reason is that we do resource combination. So we squash together all the CSS, we squash together all the JavaScript, we squash together all the images, right? So all of our images, and again, this is all done at runtime. So you just build the site normally, right? And then chuck it up on the server, and at runtime, we squash everything together. We squash the images up and use CSS sprites to actually rearrange those images back onto the dashboard. So we just had some Las Vegas bozo grump at us for doing our filming in the hallway. So, like, if you compare that with a payload of 408k with, say, a big New Zealand newspaper site, they're doing 107 requests for about the same payload size, right? And obviously that's taking 12 seconds as opposed to our site taking 5 seconds. So we're seeing really significant performance increases. So we're going to have a beta program. Obviously, ActionList is all go. The site's up there. It's a great tool. But we're going to do a beta program to actually see if people are interested in just grabbing our managed module to try and optimize some of their Web 2.0 stuff. Works with any ASP.NET web apps. You just chuck it on your server. Everything happens at runtime. Don't need to do anything different at design.
So do I have to do custom CSS?
No, you don't have to do anything. You just
It just magically works?
It just magically works.
That is
It's awesome. Just magic, right? So we got some videos up on YouTube. If you just punch in Action This into YouTube, you'll be able to pull up some videos. We've got sheep in our videos. You'll like that, won't you, Fernandes? You like sheep?
I love videos.
You love videos? Well, our ones have got sheep.
So give us an estimate. What's the before and after? So
let me... If you want to just stop filming for a second, I'm going to give you some examples.
We've been using our sales in production for about 6 months now.
Again, you sort of build these things out of necessity when you build your own startup business, and you think, well, maybe some other startup businesses might take advantage of it as well.
Mm-hmm.
So we're seeing these sorts of performance increase numbers for our site hosted in New Zealand. Obviously, it's going to work just as well for, say, a site hosted in the US, shipping data to Singapore, shipping data to New Zealand, shipping data to South Africa. Mm-hmm. And again, it's all about reducing the number of requests, and it does a kick-ass job.
So this next clip is from a company called Zumobi, which is actually a Microsoft spin-off. They show some cool things that you can do on Windows Mobile phones that run on Windows Mobile 5 and 6. So cool applications, and they got a developer angle.
And you are?
Hi, I'm John San Giovanni here at Mix 08 in Vegas.
And what are you going to show us, John?
So we're going to talk a little bit about Zumobi, which is a really cool kind of widget platform for Windows mobile devices. Totally free. You can fly by get.zumobi.com from your phone and pull it down and party on it. It's actually very cool. We have over 100 tiles, which are little widgets that you plug into your phone, arranged in this 4x4 grid. Let me actually give you a test drive. So if I launch the application, so right now you're looking, these are the 16 tiles in my Zoom space. I've lovingly crafted this Zoom space to reflect my lifestyle. And we have this really hot video game style 2D scene graph and render. So check it out. You can actually zoom in and out to these tiles very quickly. You can also, by direct manipulation, kind of drag them around. Have a bunch of really killer content deals. You can see we have a bunch of tiles from MTV News.
And what platforms are supported for this app?
Actually, right now we're available on Windows Mobile 5 and 6, and we'll be off of BlackBerry soon. And we're sort of, you know, really every tile runs across different platforms, so you can kind of navigate around these tiles. The other cool thing is we have our own synchronization framework, so every one of these tiles is synchronized locally, so you never have to wait for a network round trip.
Oh, really?
Which is very cool. Yeah, so it's always very immediate, because you know, you have the sexy zooming user interface, you don't want to kind of zoom in and then wait for storage to load. That's a little bit of a drag. So we have this cool 4-level zooming model. So there's the articles at the lowest level, then the tile is one level, then this is our quarter tile view where you can actually see a little glanceable notification of what's happening, and then the highest level is the zoom space view. And then the other cool thing is that we have this adaptive UI construct. So for on non-touchscreen based devices, mm-hmm. like I have a Vox here, then we have the app running here as well. And this is, you can see, pretty much the same experience. We also run landscape, portrait, square, all that. And so I can zoom in. And this is actually, you know, this device over here is a 400 megahertz, you know, pretty speedy device. But this one is a 200 megahertz device, and it's still actually pretty speedy because we have our own kind of video game renderer. And then the cool thing is, if I wanted to drill into like Flickr, for example, and then I can actually navigate around. Again, all these pictures are it's a personalized feed per user. I can zoom into an individual image, and it's super responsive, super fast, all written in .NET 1.1, so it's a very small download if you just, you know, get it right from your phone.
And you mentioned it was a game renderer. Are you using DirectX or OpenGL or something?
We actually wrote our own. So,
really?
From scratch. Wow. Yeah, we have our own 2D scene graph that actually renders all this. And so you can see we have a bunch of tiles from Amazon, a bunch of tiles from AP News, you know, Traffic.com, Flight Stats, Fox TV Family Guy's a riot, you know, kind of living wallpaper. A lot of very, very cool stuff. And the punchline is that two things. Number one, every tile is a viral object. So when you zoom into a tile, you can, you know, you're sitting in a bar and they're like, oh, dude, that's cool, I want that. You can stab the 6 key and say, I want to send this tile to somebody. It throws you over the wall. wall to your contact picker in Winmo. You select the contact, you say action, and it's going to send it to them through our data center. So we're tracking kind of the viral spread of tiles, which is a really cool social computing kind of angle. And then you get tiles into your inbox. Actually, let me show you that. That's very cool. So you can, if I look at the tiles that someone has sent to me, I just go down here to my zero menu, and this little drawer slides up, and this will show me all the tiles that on the data center anybody has sent to me. We also have featured tiles and other stuff, so I can kind of cursor down and take a look at all these tiles. And then if I go and I actuate on one of these tiles, I'm like, okay, I want to add this onto my Zoom space. It tells me some details. Now it says choose a tile to replace. And again, I'm in complete control over my Zoom space. So I navigate around and say where I want this to go. Let's say I want to put it right next to the other Amazon tile. I say action. And you'll see a little kind of round trip to the server. It'll pull down the server code, and pretty soon this will be a fully functional tile running locally on my device. There it is. So now it's totally there, working. We don't need an individual cert because it's all inside our black box environment and can't be malicious. Cool. So that's one thing that's cool. The second thing, of course, is the developer story. So
yeah. So walk us through how does somebody build their own tile, if you will?
Very straightforward. If you fly by dev.zumobi.com, you can download our SDK. Pretty comprehensive SDK. Includes all of the kind of social computing kung fu, all of the technical, for sending tiles back and forth. Also, our sync architecture is all included in the SDK and hooks into whatever Web 2.0 backend you have, including, you know, REST and SOAP and XML feed, whatever. And then you can actually create, you know, little games, whatever widgets you want, using the SDK, just JavaScript and XML, laughably easy to create a tile in a long weekend. And then you zap it off to us, and if it's cool, we'll throw it onto the gallery. So it's a very kind of open development environment. People can play with it. And the development SDK is actually pretty architecturally cool. You can do a lot of cool stuff with it.
And you said it was dev. Spell the address?
Zumobi, Zumobi. And if you want to learn more about Zumobi, you can just type Zumobi into your favorite search engine. There's a great YouTube video that kind of walks you through some of the demos I just gave you in a little higher fidelity. There's also, on Zumobi.com, a pretty comprehensive overview, whether you're an advertiser or a developer or whatever. You can get more details there. All of this stuff was one of the first Microsoft spin-outs. So this was all done inside the walls of Microsoft Research.
Right, right.
And then packaged up and spun off as a kind of self-contained entity in downtown Seattle. So.
Well, great to hear, and thank you for your time. Cool stuff.
Thank you. Appreciate your time.
Bye.
So some pretty cool stuff with Zumobi on what they can do with mobiles, and I love that it's open and anybody can program it as well.
And for this next clip featuring Scott Hanselman and Clint Ruckus talking about Mix 08.
So we're here with some of my favorite people, Scott and Clint. Why don't you guys introduce yourselves? I'll let you.
Okay, this is Clint. Hi, Clint Ruckus, academic developer evangelist with Microsoft. You guys know me from Coding for Fun. I've built a disco dance floor, automated bartender, and now for Maker's Faire. This year I'm building a skateboard Segway.
Very, so, very cool stuff. And Scott, you are?
I'm Scott.
What would you say you do here?
Every time I tell anyone what I do, I get in trouble. So at this point, I do videos and screencasts and blog and write books and give talks and write code and do open source stuff and VAs.
Cool. All right, so let's talk about some of the projects you guys are working on.
Okay,
so,
okay.
Clint, we'll start with you since you mentioned your Segway skateboard. So, what the hell is a Segway skateboard?
So you have a normal Segway. They're really cool. I really want one, but the problem is they're too dorky. Literally, like, I see people riding them, and I want to push them off.
You do kind of want to tackle
and then
them.
Secretly, then I want to ride it, but then someone will have to push me out, and that's not cool. So what I devised was, riding a skateboard, you know, it's less dorky, it's kind of cool. I do it from time to time. And then you move the wheels from the outside in, and then tilt your body to the side. So you're riding a skateboard, and it's, in essence, you have a teeter-totter mechanism. That it's actually pretty fun to work with. I got the frame built. I'm working on the software right now. I wish I knew
better. Why does it need software?
So when you lean forward, because it's a, you know, like balancing on a knife edge.
Hang on, I want a skateboard, and the wheels are like this.
So you're like this, the wheels are right in the middle.
So the wheels are like this one here.
Yeah, the wheels are out, but I moved it in, so you remove the side. So you only have two
wheels. Okay, so it's on the unicycle.
Yeah.
Okay.
So when you lean forward, it's going to tip down. Right. Okay? And then it goes forward.
It's motorized.
Yeah, it's inverted pendulum. So to move forward, to counteract the tilting, the wheels are going to want to move forward.
Oh, so when you detect a forward motion, you speed up.
I speed up.
It's so dangerous.
I know. I'm going to hurt myself. It's going to be awesome.
And it's all going to be captured on video, too.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I already have some video of me with the motors off, just with the frame built.
How big are your motors? I mean, like amps.
Amp-wise, I don't know. They're 12 volts. They're built for BattleBots. I have BattleBot gearboxes. They're supposed to be able to go 9 miles an hour.
So you can support human weight.
Yeah, the frame. I've already jumped on it. No, my dad has actually gone on it. My dad is a larger man. So.
Person of size.
I'm sure he's going to love this.
The correct term is sorry, Dad. Person of size.
Yeah, my dad's going to hate me.
Person of size.
And then what else am I working on? I did a Facebook Twitter syncing application that Scott helped me improve because I don't code very well.
Yeah, so one of the interesting things is at Mix, this is cool, is you broke out your laptop and actually had Scott saying you're doing it wrong, which is always...
Yeah, that's totally not how it was done. Mix is a very collaborative thing, right? It's all about busting out the laptop and going, dude, and then having someone go, that sucks, do it with Link, or whatever.
Actually, I think it was...
So what was your recommendation?
I said, that sucks, do it with Link.
Okay.
No. I think it was Scott, I know I can do this better. How would you do it?
Well, then we ended up finding Daniel Casolino, who was even better, because he was walking by. So then you bring people in, and we build a plug-in model. So his stuff could sync with not only Facebook and Twitter, but also Messenger and Communicator and Skype.
So now it went from you'd have to recompile it to now we're building in a plug-in framework that will work with anything. It's actually pretty cool.
So Scott, you're doing a session here.
Oh, crap, yeah. I have a session in an hour.
So what are you doing a session on?
It's on ASP.NET MVC.
Okay.
And actually, there's Phil Hacker over there. He's on it. They're doing a live webcast.
Talking over here.
I don't know why I'm talking about they're live right now on kick.com.
Oh, that's funny.
QIK.com. So I'm doing a talk. Phil's the PM for MVC.
Okay.
And God help me, it'll be okay. I'm starting to get nervous.
Okay.
You know what I mean? You gotta amp up for the first hour before we talk.
Which is why you're taking, junk food, make sure to get the caffeination going.
Breakfast of champions.
Excellent.
Our bars and Diet Coke.
Even though it's like 2 o'clock.
I just woke up. Breakfast of champions.
Vegas.
So, any fun projects you're working on the side, Scott?
I got a lot of stuff that I'm doing. I'm doing external stuff and internal stuff. But one of the things I'm doing right now is trying to read as much source code as I can.
Yeah.
Because I want to just get an understanding of what's going on in the community, and I don't think that one can become a really good writer of code unless one reads a lot of code. So I've been doing this thing on my blog called the Weekly Source Code.
Mm-hmm.
And I know there's some kind of rule about not reading source code, but I'm not paying attention to that rule. I'm reading as much as I can. Well, then let me do it.
Yeah, I'm sure we'll just edit this out.
Yeah.
No, it's true. I thought the rule was we weren't allowed to check out patents.
I need to make a call.
I think you can't do either.
No,
I wasn't aware of the source code.
You're writing code.
I am not. I'm writing code and checking it in.
Yeah.
I need to make a call. No, seriously though, I just think that the community needs to read as much code as you can. I even recommend that people have a code garage sale. And a couple people have done that. They found like those old crusty pieces of code that they have lying around, and they put it out there, right? Because you never know when someone might have an algorithm or a pattern or something cool, plug-in model for.
Yeah, actually, I just emailed Scott 2 days ago because one of our links on coding was broken, and Scott wrote the article, and he actually still had it, and it's in my inbox, but.
After we finished the plug-in model thing, he sent me the before and after code, like 10 minutes ago, and that'll make that a blog post.
So it was literally like how I did it, and then it was how Scott was going to do it using normal, normal for loops and for each.
And Daniel.
And then we implemented it with Link.
Right.
Hi, I'm Matthias Shapiro, an interaction designer with Veresi Solutions. Here at Veresi, we like to keep up on all the latest technology, so when I saw what people were doing with Brian Peek's managed library for the Wiimote, I decided to give it a shot. We're going to take a quick look at an application that I built in WPF for visualizing all the information that's coming off of the Wiimote.
Once we've established a Bluetooth connection between our computer and the Wiimote, we can track the accelerometer changes. We can track the button changes. And we can also do things like turn on the LEDs on the Wiimote. Using the infrared camera on the Wiimote, we can also track the infrared lights that we're pointing the Wiimote at. Here we're tracking two infrared lights, as well as a calculated target that indicates where the Wiimote is being pointed. Now, for all the visualization you're seeing here, there's absolutely no code being written. All the items here are data-bound to the information coming off of the Wiimote, and then displayed using templates designed to correspond with it.
While this visualization is cool and everything, what we really wanted to do was take the Wiimote and see what we could do with next-generation interfaces. With things like the Surface kind of looming on the horizon for developers, we figured that using the Wiimote and its multi-point capabilities would be a great way to practice developing for a multi-point system.
Drawing inspiration from Johnny Chung Lee and Synergy's work with the Wiimote, we built these infrared gloves out of about $30 of electronics components. You simply switch the battery packs on, and we have our infrared lights that the Wiimote's going to pick up for natural interaction. With the Wiimote facing towards the user, we can simply point and pinch for some simple interaction with on-screen objects. Using the pinch, we can select single objects or multiple objects and move them independently around the screen. We can also scale an object by pinching a single item with both hands and moving our hands. Finally, because all these interactions are attached to a customized grid type instead of a single object, we can put whatever XAML interface elements we want into it and still maintain the multipoint capabilities as well as the inherent abilities of the original layout. This means we can work on our multipoint interactivity completely separate from our interface design, and any updates we make to the interaction won't mandate further updates to the interface.
Hi, my name's Bill Reese, and I'm a Microsoft XNA Game Studio MVP from Tampa, Florida. In the fall of 2007, I saw a post by Jeff Weber, the author of the Farseer physics engine for XNA. I started thinking to myself, hey, this engine's written completely in C#. I wonder what it would take to make it work with Silverlight. I had a demo together in a couple of days, and a complete version soon after that. The video you are watching now is some of these demos running in Silverlight inside the browser. It performs really well and shows the power of running the .NET framework inside of the Silverlight plugin. The core engine code is identical between XNA and Silverlight, and the Silverlight physics engine runtime comes in at just a bit over 100K. The best thing about this engine is that Jeff has released all the source code to CodePlex, and anyone is free to use the engine in their own application. In the next week or so, we will be releasing a new version for Silverlight 2.0 Beta 1, and all of the source code and samples will be available on CodePlex. Now I'd like to hand things over to someone who has done some amazing things using the Farseer physics engine in Silverlight.
Hi, my name is Andy Beaulieu, and I am a software developer and trainer based in Syracuse, New York. It turns out that Silverlight provides a great mechanism for 2D games development, because it provides good performance and shields the developer from tedious things like managing a back buffer. And when you couple Silverlight with a great physics engine such as Farseer, the possibilities are endless. Here we are looking at a game I wrote using Silverlight and Farseer physics called Sort the Foobars. The object of this game is simple. You need to rotate the lever in the middle of the screen and sort the good foobars from the sick-looking foobars. Farseer takes care of the complex physics calculations to make the foobars collide and move in a lifelike manner. And Silverlight is taking care of the more mundane animations, such as the foobars' expressions when they collide with something. These expressive animations were created using Expression Blend. This next demo shows a very powerful aspect of the Farseer physics engine, and that is polygon geometries. In this demo, I can use the mouse to draw out shapes, and those shapes are then translated into a polygon geometry in Farseer. So I'm just going to draw out a little landscape, and then I can add in some additional physics objects, again using the mouse, and those objects are translated into Farseer's polygon geometries, and they fall according to the gravity settings. There you have it, animation using Silverlight and Farseer physics.
What's the deal?
Yeah, see, Dan behind the camera. What's the deal with Visual Basic? Who uses this thing? What if, and also, who are these people?
How many exceptions am I supposed to catch? What's the deal?
What's the deal? No? You do any impressions at all?
Not really. I'm not.
Captain's log. 476.5. Since passing through a cosmic cloud, I have noticed a peculiar change in the behavior of my crew. Their personalities have altered, but somehow they seem familiar. I don't know what to do. Report to sick bay, mister.